Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Kieran McClintock didn't know until after her father died that he was gay. She grew up in an apparently idyllic household, the daughter of an Ohio State administrator father who juggled a family and a very big secret. Her new memoir, entitled My Father's Closet, revisits familiar Columbus sites, the Ohio State of the Vietnam War protests, the Oval, and a 4th of July parade in Upper Arlington. But at its root is deception and revelation. McClintock is a psychologist, author, professor, and consultant specializing in family secrets. She joins us now. Welcome to the show, Kieran McClintock.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
This isn't just about your father keeping a secret from you. So did your mother. And really, a lot of the book is about her and about your relationship with her. It changed her.
Yes. I say that my mother had a degree from OSU in library science, but she was a master at deceptive language. She really had a co-conspiracy with him. And I say that in a positive way. They couldn't have revealed his life at that time and in that era. And there was so much at stake for them. But they were also loyally in love, which is why I love it when a reader says they're drawn into the characters, because they are sweetly in love. And finding my father's journal at age 19 showed me how sweetly he was in love with my mother, in courting her. And they were lifetime dance partners. There are many ways in which, from the outside world, there was no view of anything other than a typical, what I call, Grover's Corners family.
Right, from Winesburg, Ohio, right? Like that kind of a thing. What did you, when you were growing up, so, in that experience, did it feel any different? Did you sometimes look at your other friends' parents and say, and notice a difference? We all do that. And we, of course, everybody is different.
Actually, our family is where my friends hung out. You know, they came over to our house. So there, it isn't maybe like some other secret systems, maybe an alcoholic family or in a family with incest where the family shuts down and there are no friends or neighbors coming or going. Mm-hmm. And in the book, the neighbors are involved in things and friends. And my father developed gay friends on campus who do things like have to smuggle his gay pornography out of the basement while he's dying at the end of his life. So there are interesting characters that show up in the book because we did have an open family. They were so well closeted in some ways that it just did appear like the fun place to hang out. My parents were funny and fun.
And again, you say they were so well closeted. Your mom, too.
Yes.
As a co-conspirator.
Yes. Well, I don't think that mom was lesbian.
No.
She had a celibate life and knew it and told me about it in the few months I had with her between his death and hers. But she didn't really know much of any other way to go.
Did she ever tell you about that?
I could read you a little excerpt.
Yes, please.
There sat my mother on the day after we buried my father, telling me that I had never really known the man I call my father. I knew the straight man, but I didn't know the gay man. I knew the loyal man, but I didn't know the adulterer. I knew the level-headed, practical man, but I had only glimpsed the artist at the easel, the interior designer with color swatches, the theatrical, mustached villain. I didn't know the unabashed, passionate gay lover, the man whose friends might have called him a Dali Omi Palone, which is a gay language from the 1960s. Apparently, he was all of these as well. Just one day past his funeral, my mother, who had lost him so many times she had stopped counting, faced her final loss and unburdened herself to me. That was the day she came all the way out of my father's closet.
So she was dragged in there with him.
Yes, and chose to stay. Now, I found letters she and Dad had sent to each other during the war, and one of them, my mother says that she has met at a dance club, at the USO dance club, she's met another artist-type femme man. And she writes about that to him. And he's kind of jealous because the guy's from Texas and probably has oil money. But there are ways, as I went back through the archives of their history, that all this gay information started showing up.
But when she's saying that, when did she know he was gay?
Well, the narrative...
Thoroughly.
How does she thoroughly know? We don't have her here to ask,
no,
do we?
And she never actually...
Well, in this time period when mm-hmm. she was out of the family story and being honest with me, she tells me what most kids don't ever hear their parents say. She said, "Honey, you were our last sex." Ah. So that would have left them with many years of her knowing this and of her protecting his secret. But it's finding the character Walter, my father's long-term partner, that gave us even more information. And I believe that she couldn't keep it all under wraps once he developed a serious long-term partnership.
The anger that you felt at discovering your dad was gay, it wasn't about his homosexuality. You weren't mad at him for being gay, but it was the secret. And it was about the secret and that he shared the blame with your mother. It wasn't just him. It was her, too.
I didn't get a sense there was blame, but it is interesting that shame, that shame's core opposite is blame.
Okay.
So if you want to keep your shame at bay, you'll blame other people. But I didn't see a good deal of that with her. I think he knew she was long-suffering. They kissed every morning when he left for work. They kissed every evening when he came home. He came home at 5 o'clock like clockwork. And they had what I believe love is about, which is a true regard for each other's well-being. And for her, that meant a lot of protection of him and probably incredible heartache. In the book, I tell the story of her holding him the day he learns that his partner has died suddenly. And I believe she helped him through that grief, even though that was a very dark period in his life.
This was Walter. He was an economics professor at Ohio State.
Yes.
Gosh, just describing, just reading about them, just having lunch, a simple lunch together in the faculty lounge, is kind of hard to take, how stressful it must have been, but how exciting it was.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're looking over their shoulders to make sure the waiter doesn't see them touch each other.
Yeah.
And how long a glance can you offer? How much eye contact can you keep before you might be discovered as having something more than a casual faculty lunch?
There's a really interesting and bittersweet twist when it comes to your dad's relationship with Walter. Walter had fled Germany in 1933 at the age of 26 after learning his family was Jewish. He didn't know. Another secret.
Yes. They went to Christian church there, the Lutheran Christian church, and he didn't know, and nor did his two brothers, all of whom were about the same age, that they had a grandparent who was Jewish. And so they come home from church, and the mother has to inform them that they are all in danger and they have to all flee Germany. And I was able, through archival research, to find how they all came to America eventually. And through their obituaries, learn the story of how Walter was working for a Jewish bank, and they had many possessions, artworks that the Nazis had taken over, and they were smuggling art out of Germany. And that's all, it reads like a novel.
Right.
It reads like fiction. But that was all based on archival information.
You employed creative nonfiction to imagine events and conversations, and I was wondering how that process worked for you when it came to your parents especially.
Yes. The book is my process of getting to know my gay father. And all my life, you know, he was influencing my world. His lover was influencing our house.
He was a family friend.
I had never seen him until the picture came up.
But his existence, right.
Yes. I knew by the time I was out of the house that he and Walter traveled to New York on a regular basis. And Father kept every playbill from every play they ever saw in New York City. And they loved theater and art museums. So there wasn't a lot to fill in. But the filling in is my journey as an adult, trying to love my father, trying to know from what I did know of my straight dad, who the gay dad likely really was. And so people are reading heart in that, and it's because that's the heart of me looking. And sometimes in the book I'm 10, and sometimes I'm 30, and sometimes I'm working with a priest in the AIDS epidemic in San Francisco, or I'm dating a gay man because I was drawn to gay men unwittingly.
But this was before you knew your dad was gay, or not necessarily?
Well, Mother had told me.
How old were you?
When Mother told me, 35. Mm-hmm. Yes. She didn't tell me about Walter.
You learned that from reading your dad's stuff. How did you feel when she told you? Did something fall into place? Did you all of a sudden go, oh, well, okay, now a lot of other stuff makes sense, or not?
Well, he had begun hanging out with gay friends. So I did know some of those people would come to parties or we would go out to dinner with them. So I was aware that things had been changing. Now, I challenged my father, and that story's in the book, because he decides to go home from a family trip where they had come to California to see me. And he went home early because he said in Ohio the pipes would freeze at Christmas time. But I believe he came home to be with Walter for the holidays, that he just couldn't tolerate his life that far away, and that leaving Mother with me would give him a chance to go home. So on the drive to the airport, after only 4 days of his visit, when I just painfully ached for him, I asked him if he was gay, and he tap danced all around the answer. He said, you know, I've never been a country club kind of man. I don't like to play golf with my friend, Sam. I've really gotten comfortable with the gay men I know. Never
actually said it.
But,
of course, in his writings, he very graphically lays it down.
Well, I was reading his journal because I wanted my parents to have at least had a good start. I wanted them to be young and in love, and he was describing them going to movies, and it was all swell and wonderful. And then I ran into his very graphic scene of, I guess you said it was tastefully done.
Well, it was graphic without being salacious, I thought.
Thank
you. He just kind of laid it down. He just said, this is what happened, as if you'd talk about what you had for dinner that night.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And
you can't read it on the air, but, you know, it's...
No.
But it's not that.
Yeah. But. Well, and I, in reading it, just stopped short in the middle of things. I'll read you what I say after I actually face that section of his journal.
Because you weren't expecting it when you came upon it.
No.
Right.
I thought they still had an idyllic first start. I want to reach back into their lives and stop them. Charles describes them as merging into each other's world, talking easily for hours. He convinces Alice life will be great with him. He believes they're meant to be, and how could I believe otherwise? When they're ready to stand before the minister and say, is there any reason why these two should not be joined in marriage, speak now or forever hold your peace, they don't know the pain that lies ahead for them. No one will raise a hand. My 19-year-old soon-to-be father doesn't analyze his sexual complexity on paper. He can't see into the future. So whether I look to the stars or to a deity who ordained this or a philosophy to shed light on their uncommon connection, I can't stop their courtship. It's definitely moving forward.
We're talking about coming out late in life today. My guest, Kira McClintock, is a psychologist, professor, and consultant specializing in family secrets. She's the author of a new memoir. It's entitled My Father's Closet. She'll be at the Bexley Public Library on May 10th at 7 p.m. You can learn more about that. Check out the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. We'll talk about this some more. If you have a question or comment for Karen McClintock, McClintock. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about family secrets. Still with us is psychologist Karen McClintock. Her story about growing up with a closeted father is chronicled in her new memoir, My Father's Closet. Joining us now by phone is psychiatrist Lauren Olson. The second edition of his book, Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight, is out now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be with you both.
Lauren, you came out when you were 40. You have children. How did you tell them?
It's a funny story in a way because I made it a big deal. I took them out on a boat ride, and I went to the far end of the lake so nobody could overhear our conversation. And I told them that I was gay, and they said, "Dad, we already knew." And so it was kind of an eventful event. They wouldn't say how they had known. I didn't really think that most people knew it at that time, and I had a few surprises that people did know.
Yeah, did you know before that time?
Well, that's a complicated question,
yeah.
And I really didn't know until I was about in my mid-30s. You know, I'm a psychiatrist, and I had, of course, read about psychiatry and homosexuality through the years of my training, and I had approached it in a pretty intellectual way. I may have had, a bit more curiosity than others about it, but I never related it to myself. And then when I was about 32, I had an experience with a gay man. At that time, I was married, had two kids. I was starting my professional career, and it was not a very satisfying experience. I was not really particularly attracted to him, and I think it confirmed or kind of reinforced the idea that I really wasn't gay. I wasn't all that I had imagined that it might be. So I went on again with a certain amount of curiosity that became more intense.
You know, Karen McClintock, when you finally found out, like I asked earlier, did some kind of something fall into place? Like that explains that. Did you thought he was gay? But when did you said it wasn't until he started actually hanging out with gay people?
Well,
other
that
gay
was
men.
That was one of the clues.
Okay,
that's a hard question about coming out, and Dr. Olson does a good job of this in his helpful book about this. Because it's a process. Because either inside the individual who is coming out, there are stages in that process. And it's so dependent on culture and background experience that knowing doesn't – you don't wake up one morning and know it. Whether you're the family member or the LGBTQ person, you don't wake up and know it. You're coming to grips with – identity formation. And most of us take a lifetime to form our identities. And so if you think of it that way, it no wonder it takes people a lifetime to claim their identities based on sexual attraction and behavior.
Lauren Olson, Kieran's mother played a big role in the deception in their family. Is that common?
I think it is. You know, it's, you know, the whole idea of when you're married and in that situation, the idea that you're gay is rather abhorrent. You know, you're giving up a dream that you've had for a long time. And the people that we're married to are also forced to give up the dream as well. The issue, I think, a lot of times is that the In most cases that I'm familiar with, it's the man who comes out. But lesbians have told me it's similar for them. But for most of us, we have struggled with that painful process for a long time before we make the decision to announce that we're gay. at that time, you know, our spouses may have had some clues or some information that suggested it, but they, at that point, began the work of dealing with this profound change in their relationships.
Hmm. Yeah, the subtitle of your book is Letting Go of Living Straight. You've written about the prospect theory that in human decision-making, losses loom larger than gains, which is interesting. There's something sacrificed in coming out, in the coming out process, right?
There's a lot that you sacrifice, and particularly, I think, for most of us who were married and had children, one of the biggest things is the relationship that we have with our children. My kids, in fact, I had an email from my daughter this morning, and she said, you know, your coming out was not the biggest deal in our lives. The divorce was the biggest deal in our lives. And, you know, I would have to say that in many ways that was a bigger deal for me and as well, because, you know, I had a very high premium placed on being the full-time invested father. And I had been up until that point. And so I was struggling with the dilemma of, what do I do now? I've made this vow to my wife, and I firmly was committed to that vow, and I was committed to my role as a father. But at the same time, I felt drawn to this other life. And so both choices seemed totally undesirable, to stay married and try and live this morally inauthentic life, or leaving to a life that I didn't know. And the only thing I could think about were the losses. I had no idea what the gains would potentially be for me. And I'm sure that it was the same when my wife began to confront the issue, too, that she couldn't see that there might be some potential gain for her. It was all about loss.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are gains that you describe as well in your writing. And I think as the child of a gay parent, the gain for me was that it broke my unconscious generational pattern of reliving family sexual secrets. So
it
helps the
that?
Children then to know how to not repeat a marriage where there's a sexual secret in the family or a good deal of shame around sexuality. And that could be many different kinds of sexual shame. But the children, at least my sister and I, both inherited a first marriage experience where we repeated something very, very similar to the dynamic between our parents. And my work in shame says shame is transmitted generationally. So when the individual is free of that shame that's led them into secrets and binding up of identity, then the next generations don't have to repeat similar patterns.
You are a consultant. You're a psychologist, Karen McClintock, professor, consultant specializing in family secrets. Was this inspired by your own experience?
Yes, absolutely. My doctoral work is in the effects of the closet on children. We actually went thinking there would be some effects, and these were people who had been in the closet 14 years or more.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't prove that there was damage, even from the closeting. But the reality is we could only study those people after the parents had already come out to them. We can't do studies of the closet because we can't get inside there to do the research.
Gotcha.
But we know that when people like Dr. Olson come out, that their children have that gain of understanding, and they can release their own sort of the shame they might have caught or inherited. And now I know your daughter has made a nice statement, too, about that it didn't seem to affect her.
The divorce did.
Yeah.
More.
And the divorce was the hardest part.
Yeah. Mike in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I came out... Well, I'm 64 years old, and I came out at the age of 21. I was right at that cusp, that change of time when people used to stay very much in the closet and when we started coming out in a big way. Most of my friends, gay friends a couple of years older than I, got married, and most of those younger did not. It really bothers me when we have people against.
You mean they
gay
got married in a heterosexual marriage?
In a heterosexual
gotcha,
way.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That was the only type of marriage there was.
Right. Right.
And
right.
They were trying to do the right thing.
Right.
And they were trying to go with their feelings. I almost did the same myself. But fortunately, I made the change in the other direction. And for those who got married, it never worked out. They may have gotten married. They may have had kids. They loved their kids and so forth and so on. But 20 years later, 30 years later, they finally acknowledge or don't acknowledge, this isn't me. These are not my feelings. This doesn't work. And for people who think that they're going to drive us underground or make us change or we're going to pray or go to psychiatrists or do whatever it takes to make us turn straight or that we're just going to disappear, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It just drives it underground and everybody winds up unhappy. Get over it. Bake the wedding cake and wish him well. Don't go to the wedding reception if you don't believe
yeah,
in that.
Right. Oh, well, that's, you know, I, yes. Obviously you specialize in family secrets. I mean, family secrets, and by the way, Mike, thank you so much for sharing your story. Family secrets, regardless, there's a toll that's taken.
Yes. I remember early in my 20s, I read a book on alcoholic family systems, and the symptoms were similar, like no talk rules and don't listen to your intuition and don't trust that what you see is what's really going on. And so I thought, oh, maybe I had an alcoholic parent. And then I didn't. I realized I didn't. But I started getting curious about what a child in a sexual secret, a family with a large sexual secret, might actually grow up experiencing. So I went at it from a doctoral study viewpoint, and then I finally confessed to my women's writing book group after writing other books that I was ready to tell the truth about my own story.
Yeah.
And kids have to come out of their families' closets, too. There was one point I wanted to make, too, though, that there's a religious piece to coming out. My father had to come to grips with his own Protestant religion and what it had told him and the shame of how the church had used words that we don't use in common language, fornication and abomination. Mm-hmm. And so many people in the coming out process who want to be still faithful to any world religion have to also revamp their whole experience of how to be in God's grace.
Yeah, Lauren Olson?
Yeah, I wanted to pick up on something that Mike had said. I'm 74, and so I'm in the silent generation where coming out was not even a consideration for most of us. And I would agree with him that many of us in those years got married. Some people in that group had some idea about same-sex attraction. For others, like myself, it wasn't even really known. And one of the things that resonated with me in Karen's book was the engagement letter that her father had written to her mother. And I wrote very similar letters to my wife. I mean, when I made my commitment to my wife at that time, I thought that I loved her as much as anybody could. A lot of those feelings resonated very strongly with me. It was all I knew, all I could relate to. I had no evidence that men could have relationships like that. And so it wasn't until actually when I actually fell in love with a man when I was in probably my late 30s that I realized that the intensity of the emotions that I felt for him were different entirely on a different plane than those that I'd had for my wife. And it was quite a shock to me at that point. And I still love my wife. We have a good relationship. She's very supportive of me. We went through the usual things that divorcing couples go through. Mm-hmm. But she never used the children as a wedge or in any way to try and damage me. And And I really love her for that, because I think it helped to preserve my relationship with my kids. But, you know, when I feel now is not guilt about what happened or even shame about it. What I feel is more a sense of loss. The day-to-day interaction with kids that I missed, and I know now that I've stolen that from them too because of this situation by not giving them access to me. And that made me very sad as I read Karen's book.
But wasn't that just the function of divorce, though, right? I mean, more than anything?
Yes, yeah. I think so. I think, you know, most men who love their kids feel that pain of the every other Wednesday and every other weekend kind of involvement. Mm-hmm. And you miss the things that happen over the glass of orange juice in the morning or picking somebody up at ballet class, those sort of casual interactions where you get a good chance to know each other in a different level. And I really miss that. I feel very sad about that, and I know they do, too.
William in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, William.
Hello. I have an ethical question of sorts. I had a friend who is 90 years old, and he and I were friends for many years, and he kind of relayed to me a lifelong, I'm not sure it's completely closeted, but a homosexual or bisexual life. I don't know if his wife ever knew, or his kids, and I'm just kind of wondering if it ever comes up now that he's gone with his daughter, with his children, if that's something I should reveal.
What if they don't know already. Karen McClintock, what do you think?
It's such a dilemma that where I went is there's a really good book called Family Secrets on whether or not to disclose things. And sounds like Dr. Olson has an answer ready to go.
Dr. Olson?
Yeah, I think, you know, the rule is generally not to out somebody to other people. Unless they've been someone who, you know, Barney Frank has the rule, you don't out people unless they've been active in opposing the human rights for gay people. And I think that's valid. I don't know that there's anything to be gained by that, by telling them. You know, I would say that if they ever ask questions about it, then it would be reasonable to be honest in response. But I don't think it would make a point of bringing it up to them.
I have a point in my book, however, where I sat with one of my father's friends and asked him if Dad was gay. And his willingness to talk with me about the question, and later in life, his willingness to say, he was your dad, you have the right to know everything about your dad, just destroyed me into a puddle of sadness and tears and gratitude that he was willing, at some cost to himself and some ambiguity inside himself, to go ahead and tell me things I hadn't known about my gay father. And I bless him for that.
But that was after you went to him asking.
I went to him asking.
So there, that's a difference there. William, good luck with that. What's the name of the book again that you referred to William to?
Family Secrets.
Family Secrets. Okay. We will continue our conversation with Karen McClintock, psychologist, professor, consultant specializing in family secrets, and author of a new book entitled My Father's Closet. Also with us, Lauren Olson, psychiatrist and author of Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about coming out as an adult. For many, that involves having to tell the truth, not just to parents and siblings and work associates, but also spouse and children. None of that sounds easy. Still with us by phone is psychiatrist Lauren Olson, second edition of his book, Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight, is just out. And also with us, psychologist, author, professor, and consultant specializing in family secrets, Karen McClintock. Her story about growing up in Columbus with a closeted father is chronicled in her new memoir, My Father's Closet. Questions, comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Karen, when it comes to serious family secrets, are they ranked? Are they categorized? Where does being closeted fit in on that matrix?
Well, thank you for the question. I'm pondering it for a moment. I guess I don't want to compare them. The danger would be to compare them to incest, for example, and the damage of incest, or the damage of a straight parent having an affair during a marriage.
Okay.
Oddly enough, I think our culture would be, this book would be less even public if it was the standard straight family with another affair happening.
Gotcha.
But in this book, I'm able to affirm that my father's love is very complex and that he loved my mother dearly and in that commitment loved us and loved this other man in his world in maybe a fuller and different way. So I think I'm resistant to the question.
Sure. I'm just wondering. I mean, I, it's a question that it occurred to me, but I get why you're resistant to it. It makes sense. Plus everybody's, you know, there's the old snowflake thing. I mean, it's every single thing is always different. Lauren Olson, what about you in your work? I mean, do you agree with Karen McClintock's, look at that?
One of the things that stood out in her book as I read through it was her feeling that she didn't know the gay side of her father. And I would have to say that that was a part of my life that I didn't share with anybody. And another thing that she said in there, which resonated with me, is she asked him what it was like, and he said it was hell. And, you know, in today's news that just came out, the death of Aaron Hernandez, who hung himself in prison, now looks like he had a secret life with another man. And, you know, I think that sometimes people perceive our decision to come out as a very casual one, and as if it's we're sort of going through a a midlife crisis where we're trying to explore a new world. But I don't think that a lot of people can understand the intensity of that pain. I was at a book signing a week ago, and there was an older woman there who talked about her grandson coming out to her. And she was supportive. And then he came out to his parents who said, "We will not have a gay son." And he killed himself. Suicides in men who are considering coming out is very high. Because as I said earlier, you know, it's all about loss. It's not about gain because you cannot perceive what that gain is from inside the closet. All you can think about are the things you're going to lose.
Yeah, you've written that suicide rates for gay men are about 3 times higher than for the general population. And you wrote that those suicides often occur at the time of coming out. And I would have thought that they would have been instead of coming out. So it's after the coming out process or during that where there is the rejection or the withdrawal of love in some parts.
Yes, yes. And it can be before that, just even confronting the possibility of leaving a life that you'd made. I mean, most of us that I know that are older and have made those vows made them with serious intent. Mm-hmm. And betraying the people we love is a painful process. So there's a lot of conflict about that decision and what the consequences are going to be.
Let's turn now to Chris in Columbus. You're on the air, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for you guys. I come from an insanely homophobic family, so much so that I haven't spoken to my own mother in about 8 years because she told me if I was ever gay, she would disown me. And I came out as bisexual, and that just didn't really sit well with her. And my father learned to accept it, kind of didn't like that I was a male stripper, but didn't really care. But I see my family members, some of which are closeted, and I'm fearful for them because of the high suicide rate and everything. And I just wonder, what can I tell them besides that they just have to get out? Like, how can I help them get through?
Lauren
well,
Olson?
It's an important role. Yeah, it's an important thing to do, to just be there to be supportive. You know, I think one of the things that men struggle with is when you're thinking about it, is that you're afraid to tell anybody. You're afraid to say, I might be gay, because if you say that, others are going to assume automatically that you are. And there's no waking up in the morning and say, I want to take that back. I didn't really mean it. But the most critical thing in dealing with coming out is to find somebody who will accept you, and they don't have to be gay, but it's just people who can accept that. So you can have an important role in letting them share their secrets with you. But I think, you know, the important thing to realize is not everybody has to come out to the same degree. Not everybody has to do it in the same time frame. And there are real losses connected for some people, and it depends a lot on the cultural and social environments about what those things are. So I think to answer your question, be there for support. I don't think it is helpful to push them to move faster than they're ready. Everybody has to design their own time frame for making that decision to come out.
I totally agree. I think the fact that you called says you're willing to support this person, and I'm glad that you're there.
Yeah. Chris, thanks a lot for that call. We appreciate it. Ron in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Ron.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was listening. It was a godsend to come across this show and the program. I was married, with someone for 15 years, bisexual lesbian, and we have kids together. We also divorced, I guess, about 20 years ago now. The issue, my question is, when we were together, there was something lacking in the relationship for me, you know, as the man, and it wasn't fulfilling, and there were issues sexually. So I wandered and I cheated. But what the issue is with my children, and that I try to impress upon them, is that in my perspective, I felt like I was cheated on in the beginning. The fact that this person was bisexual and didn't disclose this to me, or lesbian, whichever, you know,
right.
I don't want to use false labels. But and now we have trouble, issues with our grown children. And once our divorce and separation took place, those issues came up, and all that was being discussed was the fact that I had been, you know, unfaithful. And I was continuing to say that I experienced unfaithfulness the whole relationship. And if that, you know, is that a valid point, and for if you could express that or expound on that for me?
Yeah, Lauren Olson.
Yeah, I would say to you that it is a valid point. When I was writing my book, I actually called my wife, and I said, I want to talk to you about our sex life. And she said, sure. And so we spent an evening just chatting about it. And what I wanted to know from her was there something missing? Did you sense that I wasn't totally present during our sexual activity? And her response to me was, I never sensed anything because we were both sexually naive when we were married. We both thought it was as good as it could get. And yet, I think that there were times when it wasn't perhaps as satisfying to either of us as it could have been. And I think when I found my relationship with another man, finding a level of emotional and physical intimacy that I hadn't found before was the thing that drove me to say, I can't put this away again. So I would say that that's the case. And, in resolving issues around affairs, it really requires accepting the pain that we put the other person through and asking for forgiveness, genuine forgiveness for that. And that's the only way we can get past that.
Yeah, Kira McClintock.
I wonder if I could chime in with an excerpt from the book.
Please do.
That might help about the kid perspective. Every kid has a list of things to forgive. Dad, I forgive you for multiple myeloma, for always making me wear shoes when I go outside, for your picayune habit of straightening wall pictures when you're visiting our house. I forgive you for keeping every letter I wrote home and giving them back to me with spelling corrections on them. It didn't work, by the way. I still can't spell. But I forgive you for the stuff that's hard to forgive. And this is what all the children really have to do. We have to come to grips with our real parent. And maybe your kids will have to stop using words like unfaithful, because you were in a learning and growing process as well. I forgive you for leaving mother to be my companion. I just wanted to go on being a kid. I also forgive you for hiding, even though I ached to know all of you. I wanted to ask. You wanted to talk about it. We couldn't get there, even at the end. I knew the straight dad, the leave it to beaver dad. I wish I had known the gay dad, too. So, Dad, whatever you meant when you asked for forgiveness, I offer even more. I have stopped whining. I forgive you.
Hmm. Ron.
That was touching. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Ron. Really appreciate your insights.
Yeah. And I appreciate you all. Thank you.
Take care. Kieran, your dad grew up in a time when there was barely a decent word for being gay or lesbian, not to mention LGBTQ, the alphabet soup we have now. No support out there whatsoever. How much of a role does the society play at large in all of this?
Yeah.
Now that you look back? I mean, you point well taken. He grew up in a very different time.
Yes, yes. I was thinking, Lauren's laughing, but he has a good list in his book of clobber words. And thank you, Lauren. I appreciate your book as well. Yeah, he calls those clobber words. Fortunately, as I'm still doing workshops for churches and clergy and laity across the country on sexuality issues, those clobber words are still out there. The other reality is that sometimes parents still lose custody of their kids if they're lesbian or gay. And I wanted to make sure we said that, because even though we have tons of research that those kids will be okay with their LGBTQ parents, we still have a lot of denial about that. And so adoptions are still limited, et cetera. So we do still have a long way to go in the terms of hope. People can access things now, like Straight Spouse Network is a good place for spouses whose loved ones have come out. And there are other things I wanted to just mention that inside most faith traditions, there's an advocacy group. And that's who you want to look for, is those people within your faith tradition who are open and affirming. And that really is a helpful, supportive place for people in our current culture, as we're still emerging from a good deal of shame and closeted life.
Karen,
yeah, I absolutely agree with what you're saying, Karen, about that. We talked about suicide briefly, but and there's good evidence to show that in communities where acceptance is high, suicide rates are lower.
Lower.
Yay.
Lauren Olson, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
It's been a great conversation. I appreciate the opportunity.
Lauren Olson, psychiatrist and author of the book Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight, new edition out just now. And also Kira McClintock, psychologist, professor, consultant specializing in family secrets, and author of the new memoir, My Father's Closet. Thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.